Okay, today is July 13th, Wednesday. Maybe we're going to have some bad weather later on. We don't know yet. Anyway, as part of the project that we've been working on for a few years, I've been interviewing different staff members and retired teachers and other people associated with Western Dubuque. And today we're visiting with Jim Demmer. And so anyway, Jim, take us back to St. Joe's High School.
Okay, Bob, I was part of the class of 1971. And in that class, we had nine of my fellow classmates, all guys, went to Loras College from Farley St. Joe's. A couple of our instructors were you, Bob Howard, and Brian Hyvick, both Loras College graduates. Probably had a little bit of a help leaning us that direction, but as far as our class, I would say we were probably above average athletically, decent academically. Obviously, if you're going to put that many people into college off of that, so we had a really, and I think today, I can still say today that the nine or ten of us are fairly close-knit in the sense that we had a real close group of guys. So, anyhow, some of them, Al Kleesner, Bill Hafer, Jim Kleeman, you know, kind of stick out. And right now I play softball with a couple more, Ron Lucas. Just saw Jerry Wessel the other day. So, you know, these are some close friends.
What do you have memories of the basketball back then?
Well, we had a lot of close games, but a couple of them that stick out, I guess, was beating Lansing Key High when they had 6'6 John Gruber. I remember beating them. Another couple of games that stuck out was would have been Owine Sacred Heart, our battles with Owine Sacred Heart. And we had... We didn't have a football team, so we had, quote-unquote, our homecoming was a basketball game.
Yeah.
And we beat them at our place on homecoming game. And there were some bruising battles. I remember there was a guard that I used to bump heads with quite often with them, as well as trying to help him defend 6'5 Mike Jones, who later went on to a good career at Loras College.
Yeah.
We weren't as successful against Western Dubuque and Cascade. Cascade seemed to be our nemesis for years there with my class, at least with Nick Sagrand being a very tough guard.
Okay. Because actually that was at that point, Al Marshall was already coaching then.
Yes, Al was coaching.
Exactly.
Yes.
Anyway, so that. What about some of your... other high school memories that you can bring back?
Okay.
Well, anecdotes or whatever.
Anecdotes. Well, different things. I don't know how it came about, but I was very good at Latin for whatever reason. You know, I don't think I was that great in English class, but I was really good in Latin. So like any other things, there were a couple of students. I remember Randy Healy and Al Kleesner and myself. The three of us, people always coming to us trying to get the homework. What's the homework? How do you? And that was for 2 years. I think that was a constant stream. Other things that at St. Joe's I remember really well was we had a really really good biology teacher by the name of Sister Michael Marie Joseph from New Hampton, Iowa. I remember that very well. I remember our freshman math teacher, Gene Krause, who was really good. Had I had 4 years of math like that, I probably would have been elsewhere, maybe into, you know, math teacher or something of that sort. I remember baseball team. We were fortunate enough as a senior, we won 12 straight ball games and had a couple of good sophomore pitchers that really helped us through, and those days we were successful against the Cascades and Western Dubuques in that, particularly the spring of my senior year. So I do remember that. Just a class of 50 kids, knowing everybody in your class intimately, up and down, and so I remember that.
I have to tell you, one of my favorite memories is on the basketball team, and one particular practice. I had been reading these coaching magazines. Of course, they have all these coaches that diagram their offenses and defenses, and of course, they all have real talented players that can execute this stuff. Anyway, I read this offense by this coach, and it was called the Headhunter Offense. And so I thought, well, at least let's try that. So I still can see Randy Healy and Carl Schwenninger. They're supposed to be at the high post and take turns cutting across, I think, and taking a pass. Well, we tried to execute it, and they both ran across the middle at the same time and collided.
Yes.
And that was such a classic. I'll never forget it.
I do remember that. You know, a couple of things I had taken from high school when you were coaching and when Brian Heidick were coaching. Keeping an open side of the floor and having a power move. There were two distinct offenses I remember from high school that I used when I was coaching. And I still remember 1-3-1 against his own offense and the cutter offense. I remember it was real successful, Bob, when you had Johnny Palmer running the baseline as a good shooter on the baseline. And I remember adopting that when I had junior high boys in Clinton. And it was real successful. And the other one was pick and roll on one side, high post and low post, and cutting the weak side wing through on a dominant cut. So those two stick out for me from St. Okay. Joe's days.
I was talking to Brian Heidick a couple of weeks ago. He was visiting. And so we're reminiscing. And I mentioned that I had been out in Arizona playing golf with Jim Kleeman. And he remembered very distinctly setting up a play where Jim was isolated on the far side. I think it was against the Sacred Heart.
Right.
And that play was executed correctly, and Jim made the shots, and that, I think that won the game.
Right. Right. Well, if I can remember doing that, and the other thing, if they came out on Jim, he was to get the ball to Al Pleasner up at the elbow. And I think Al was maybe six for six that game off of the elbow. If Jim didn't get the shot, it got to Al.
Okay. Okay. So anyway, you go to Loras?
I went to Loras College and got my teaching certificate, or teaching physical education, English.
Did you know right away that was what you wanted, Jim? Or?
Teaching?
Yeah.
Yes, I got into that. In fact, my brother Dan and I both, we were a year apart, and we both wanted to get into teaching and coaching.
Okay, so that was easy to make that decision and then follow up with whatever courses you
right.
required. You obviously participated in the intramural program at Loras when you were there.
I did, yes. Intramurals at Loras was fantastic.
Wow.
One of the things, and again, some of the St. Joe's people that we had, I coached our intramural basketball team at Loras, and I had Bill Hafer on it. My first year, I had Eddie Pleasner on it, Bill Hafer, Jim Kleeman, among others, and Dale Kinkle and Jerry Ross.
Wow.
And we became the first noon hour league team to win a championship in intramurals when we were seniors.
Okay. That's a pretty good distinction.
At Loras, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it was at that time. And we had a championship baseball team in intramurals that senior year as well.
Okay, so you graduated.
Graduated.
What's the next move?
Graduated in 1975. Interviewed. Basically, I interviewed maybe at three public schools, down to the final two at New Hampton. Did not get the position there, and then the Catholic schools came calling, and I ended up in Clinton. It was part of the modern day program, but there was Clinton St. Mary's, but I ended up at North Catholic. And there I taught social studies. I did have the requisite religion class, I think, and it was required for me to be the 7th and 8th grade teacher there. Coached football, girls softball, boys basketball, girls basketball, eventually in the 3 years, athletic director as well. I never sat at home. I can tell you that. Also some track involved there. And we had a really, really good era in basketball that eventually led, particularly our girls when I was there in the 3 years, led to state volleyball championship at Mater Dei 2 years running, and a state two state basketball appearances with the kids that basically came from North Catholic at that time.
Okay. So that was, you were there for...
3 years, fall of 75, 76, and 77. And in the spring of 78, got a call from Bob Howard that said, we have openings. And it just coincided with Ray LaSance, Bill Hafer, and I all getting hired at Western Dubuque the same year.
Okay, so the position you were hired for was?
I was hired for language arts.
Okay.
And went through the interview with Tom Wickham, got the job at Farley for language arts. Spent 2.5 years at Farley in language arts, and was told probably in October, that my position would be terminated at semester due to budget constraints, I'm guessing. And I moved to Dyersville and took the position at Warning Hall at Western Dubuque Shared Time from January 1980 through 1988.
Okay.
And it was probably one of the more memorable stints of teaching, the 8 years at Dyersville. We had a really close staff, and we had no study halls, no lunch duties, no bus duties.
How about the food that you got?
Hot lunch at Zager was fantastic.
They treated you like kings.
That was fantastic. If I'd have eaten there for 30 years, I'd have probably put on 50 more pounds.
Every time there was a holiday, it was a special meal, or I just remember, wow, yes. It was great.
Yes, they did. And I knew some of the hot lunch ladies there through my parents. In fact, one of them, a Mrs. Plotz, and my mother were land neighbors in Petersburg, so just the coincidences of the time.
I know. Rosemary? Mrs. Huberty?
Mrs. Huberty was there, Mrs. Plotz, yeah. Yes.
Yes. So then you were at that particular period of time at Dyersville, but then you got into the coaching.
Well, I coached junior high basketball with Bill Betts, girls basketball at Farley. That position stayed for 2 years, and all of a sudden, God bless our school board at the time, I got cut. That position got cut. What we did have, and we could see this coming, we had a great group of junior high girls athletes in that 1980-81 era, 79-80 era. So we knew that. I did coach 1 year for Dyersville Beckman in the junior high program, 8th grade girls.
Okay.
Kind of advanced that because I had no other spots available. But in May of 1983, there was a change of head coaches at Western Dubuque. Bill Hafer took over for Chuck Bailey, and Bill needed an assistant, and he came to me and asked me if I'd be the assistant. And I did, and it was 6-player basketball, and I liked the defense. Bill took the offense, and we took it from there.
I just I forget which year it was, but I remember going up to the football field in the spring. There was a junior high track meet. On the one end, there was the high jump. I kind of was walking past there, and I saw this girl. She was tall and skinny, and she was all legs. Who in the hell is that? Well, it was Shelly Barden.
Shelly Barden, yes. I think we had, there are waves of athletes at every school, and I can see 4 different waves of girls athletics in the 30 plus years that I've seen at Western Dubuque. There was a wave through the, what I would call the 83 through 86 time period, the 90-91 time period, the 98-99 time period, and then most recently now in 2014, 15, and 16.
Yeah, so it's always a cycle, isn't it? All of a sudden they come together. As far as What are the things you recall about the early 80s with the six-player?
Well, one of the things is six-player games, for the most part, and I think when there was just one coach at the helm, probably 80 to 90% of that time was given to the offense. And I know you couldn't necessarily do both. And I can remember this. First of all, go back to when I was coaching junior high at Modern Day or at North Catholic grade school. I had come across something, guard defense. And I think it probably, if you're in central Iowa, west southern Iowa, it goes to some of the defensive schools in the southern part of the state, from Minneapolis most specifically, what was called defensively an inside triangle that you set up at the half line with your guards, and I mean you're basically having your guards in offensive mode. You know, I mean, you don't let any pass cross the half line without being contested. I'm successful using that at Modern Day. When I was with Coach Betts defensively, we had the kids to do it. I kind of brought that into Epworth or to Western Dubuque High School. So we had some talent. We had probably a deeper guard court than we did at forward court at the time, and we just utilized it.
Yeah. I remember the year we played Vinton-Schulzburg at Vinton-Schulzburg. For some reason, I remember that game was, we won that game. I don't remember what the score was, but they had a hell of a real good team.
Vinton-Schulzburg was the defending state champions, and somehow, I don't know if it was our athletic director scheduled the game with them or who, but we went down to Vinton-Schulzburg just right before Christmas, so in the 1984-85 season, and they had a 50-game home winning streak.
Okay, I didn't remember that.
And we snapped their 50-game home winning streak, and I think, granted we scored some points, but I think a lot of that had to do with our all-state guard, Kate Klosterman.
So that was 83-84? 84-85. So 84-85, and that was the... Okay, so take us into that season then, 84-85, Jim.
Well, building into that season, we had moved what I would call pieces of the puzzle forward. We had advanced... In our first year in 1983, we advanced Kay Klosterman to the varsity level as a sophomore. At Christmas time, we moved Jolene Smith to the varsity. We moved Shelly Horsfield to the varsity as a sophomore. And we also moved a freshman by the name of Shelly Barden to the varsity. We added two with the next year. I take that back. We moved Lisa Wegman up to the sophomore team. We moved Lynn Wegman up to the varsity team as a sophomore. So we had all these good young athletes. 84-85, we had Shelly Horsfield as a senior, Shelly Barden as a sophomore. Senior guards, Kay Klosterman, Marla Till, and Jolene Smith. And I'd say that's the core of our ball club that year.
Yeah.
But we had very good depth.
So that was what was the record? What was our record?
I think our record going into the state tournament was going into Des Moines was 23-1, and we got beat by Ankeny right at the end.
And that was my memory. There is going to that state tournament. We made a stop at Iowa City for practice.
Yes, we made a stop in Iowa City, and Shelly Horsfield, senior, rolled her ankle on the University of Iowa basketball floor, and she had been susceptible to some sprained ankles in the second half of the season. And there again, she was gimpy at the state tournament,
yeah.
And that hurt us. That hurt us somewhat.
Yeah.
During the regular season, when what happened, we brought Sandy Klosterman off the bench, and I remember a couple of different times where Sandy scored 20, 25 points off the bench, but it's a little different at the state tournament.
Yeah, that atmosphere is, it's just something you have to experience and gain a little bit from. But it's tough the first time. Okay. We'll talk about the transition to five player.
Well, this same year, 84-85, the varsity was playing six-player basketball, but Jerry Schmidt, our sophomore coach, and Stu Sass, our freshman coach, were running five-player program. In other words, normal basketball, as you look back at it. So I think to be a junior girl and sophomore girl that year would be a little bit difficult in the sense that, do I want to stay with the game? Is this the game I want to play?
Yeah.
And we were fortunate enough. I think the success helped out a little bit there, but we had 9 juniors, of which only 5 really played with the varsity, or 4 played with the varsity, so the other 5 were playing junior varsity basketball, practicing with the sophomores, but playing the five-player game.
Wow.
And it was, it might have been, I would say it had been a little bit difficult for those girls.
Yeah.
It really, really was tough.
I guess, you know, I still feel badly in the sense that six-player basketball was an Iowa game for decades and provided a lot of excitement. The ball moved a little quicker, court to court, that type of thing. So I guess I felt regretful that the change was made, but nevertheless, that's what we did.
I would say with the experience, and I know this is going out on a limb, but I think we might have hung a banner in 86 had we stayed with the six-player basketball.
Yeah.
But we're really fortunate, if you think about that, to be able to hang a banner the next year.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so that was, so then the transition continued, so now we're into the 86-87. What are your thoughts and memories there?
Well, I don't think we had quite as much talent in 87 as we did in 85. I'll say that point blank. I think that 85 might have been one of the deepest group of athletes that we've had at Western Dubuque. But we had enough talent.
Yes, and horses.
And we had, you know, a couple of the marquee players and players that knew their role in 1987. They could do things. We brought in junior Erica Kilberg, who could shoot lights out. And of course, with the All-Stater Shelly Barden in the middle, and a really driven, motivated guard by the name of Joan Steffen, and parts of the puzzle. Lisa Wegman came in as a defender, junior Lynn Buffelli played a key role, junior Carla Birds, junior Jolene Horsfield. You know, they played key roles. And of course, the enforcer, senior Kim Kleesner on the backside.
Yeah.
So, just a very nice, very intelligent crew of athletes.
Had some strong people inside. I remember that. I remember, well, again, didn't we wind up playing Vinton-Shelsburg?
We did. I think the turnaround game, 2 turnaround games that season, we started out 0-3. We played Pleasant Valley at our place, and Pleasant Valley had been a nemesis, I mean, just a strong rival of ours through the year. We played them at home, and we broke out the offense against Pleasant Valley at Epworth. Kim Kleesner, I think, scored 22, 23 points, just being just tough on the boards.
Big horse, yeah.
So we win that game and got us into the winning mold. We had gotten beat earlier by Hempstead, and Hempstead had a very good ball club. So we changed defensive strategies, and I guess we'll talk about the smart kids that we had. We played at Hempstead, and I think they were riding a 6-7 game winning streak, and we probably were something similar at that time, but our kids really bought into the defense that we played against Hempstead, and we literally annihilated them at Hempstead by taking their all-state scorer, Julie Casebauer, out of the game. So from there on, we had a bump in the way against Dyersville Beckman in the last regular season game. But for the most part, from there on, the kids really believed.
Yeah. Okay. So then,
and
We qualified for the state tournament as a four-team affair at that time. Obviously, looking back on it, we were kind of an afterthought going down in Des Moines, according to the most of the pundits.
And I guess you'd have to think that way. You know, North Scott had good ball players. Of course, Water Columbus had all national, if not all state, Molly tie back in the middle, with enough people around the perimeter for them. So yes, we were an afterthought, definitely going into the state.
Which probably worked in our favor, I guess.
I really think it did. So there again, it was the belief system. Were we better athletically? We'll never know. We probably, if we played them 10 times, we might have lost 5-6 times with them.
Yeah.
But on this given day, the likes of the defense, I think we get a really big lift from Lynn Buffelli in this ball game, because Shelley Barden got into foul trouble, which against a 6-4 post player, that tendency occurs. But Lisa Wegman, Lynn Buffelli, Kim Kleesner, I mean, we played what we would describe easily as man and a half on Molly Tidebeck the whole game. And Lisa Wegman found her offensive game in the fourth quarter and ended up with 10 points. She came into that contest probably averaging 5 or 4.5 points a game, and she scores 10 points in that ball game. Lynn Buffelli, I believe, scored 8 or 10 in that ball game as well. So we beat Columbus 50-41. Very surprising, I'd say. But I think we had a game plan that we believed in.
Well, I just thought the biggest injustice was the fact that Joan Steffen should have been on the all-tournament team.
Yes.
Wasn't.
Yeah, Joan Steffen made big free throws down the stretch of that ball game as well as the next one. And I know this factually, that the votes get turned in either at the end of halftime of the state tournament game at that time. Now it's like 4 minutes to go in the ball game, and if it's a close ball game and balloting MVP sometimes gets decided down the stretch.
Yeah.
But I understand their point too. They have to have that in place immediately at the end of a ball game.
Well, the other thing I remember was the fact that six players, the girls are still going on, and we were told to get off there pretty quickly.
Right. Well, you had the state's all-time leading scorer playing, Lynn Lorenzen, who was very, very good, and five player was still somewhat of an afterthought there.
Yeah, just a lot of pleasant. I remember the pep rally at the hotel was special.
Right. We had fans that were kind of, it sort of reminds me of Chicago Cub fans in one sense. Western Dubuque had never won anything, any state championships.
Yeah.
But we have these fans in place that are just eager. And we had a send-off at Hilton that was phenomenal.
It was.
We had kids hanging out all over second floors, yep, down by the pool, everyone just giving us a great send-off.
Yep.
We had an inspired practice that day, I recall. We had kids just eyes open, but I would say settled. You know, they knew what they had to do. And we went out and got down by 9 against North Scott, and just gradually came back in that third quarter and took the lead in the fourth quarter and never gave it up.
That was the ball game. So then we're a great experience, state championship. Wasn't too long after that you became the head coach.
Yes. I'd have to say, what, about 10 years of Bill and I together, Bill Hafer and I together, whether it be junior high, but teaching together, and Bill decides to go out of, get out of the education field. And
when did he tell you?
When did he tell me?
Do you remember how that came about? Or
it was a couple of weeks after the state tournament.
Yeah.
But I remember, as I look back at, there are little different things that he said. And one particularly was with when we played Cascade. He said, "Jim, keep the press on." We had a 20-point lead. Usually we pulled off the dogs. Not that night. So I think there was a... And I look back at that. That was one of the telltales. I'm not going to ever play them again, and therefore, yeah, type of thing. And no, he really didn't tell. He was... I know that they were planning... Bill and Julie were planning a family, and I think they wanted a different lifestyle.
Yeah.
And so...
He moved on.
I moved on. So in the fall of 87, so 87, 88, I took over as head coach, and I was head coach for 13 years then.
Okay, how about, talk about your move from Dyersville to Epworth.
Okay, so first the 87, 88 school year, I was still in Dyersville and head coach at Epworth. And you talk about a communication gap. There were times when I got to practice and I didn't exactly know the pulse of the kids. When I was assistant coach, it was easy. Bill knew the pulse of the kids. He saw them every day. And with girls, that's really, really, really important. So thank God I had two really, really good captains. Probably the best captain of this day that I've ever had was Jolene Horsfield. So she helped out with the pulse. But so that year went 16-6, got beaten a second round of sub-state by Dubuque Senior in the end of the season. So the next year, shared time ended at Dyersville. A lot of teaching jobs up in the air. And I remember being on a three-way call. I think Lois Tyson was probably sitting in the office at Epworth with Harold. And Lois was an advocate of mine as far as teaching English. And Tom Wickham and Art Hinker and Farley. And they determined I would come to Epworth.
Okay.
Teach English at Epworth. And it worked out really well.
Well, sure did. Okay, so, we're moving through the 90s. Any special memories during that period of time?
Yeah, some special ball players. 1993, we had the Schuler triplets. And Julie was a special ball player on that. I guess I'd go back in 1991, and Don Hafler is an All-State basketball player. One of the toughest kids I've ever coached.
Probably one of the best athletes I've ever seen. That was beautiful.
So, and Julie was a sophomore in that team, and we went 17-6, I believe, that year, and lost to Waterloo Columbus, a good Waterloo Columbus ball club that year. And then, like I said, 93, we had the Schuler triplets, and what was special about that was having three in the lineup at the same time. And if you were an outsider, you couldn't tell distinguish between Jody and Jill unless you knew how they played. Julie was easy to note, but we had interviews that year. I had an interview with the San Francisco newspaper that year, having triplets. We had still have several of those video clips of it going. That going nationally in a couple of different locations, having triplets on the ball club and playing at the same time. So the odds of that were... So that was a real,
yeah,
kind of a special year in that sense. We weren't particularly a blessed ball club, but we were decent.
Yeah.
And then the 94-95 season with Sarah Elgin. Sarah was a really, really dominant ball player.
Yep.
Good hands. Sarah went on to play at Missouri Western in college. And then we go to the other area of the 90s that I particularly like was the 98-99 years. We had the likes of Jesse Hogan, Katie Rasmussen, Abby Rudin, All-Stater Tracy White. And we had a pretty deep ball club that year with the two juniors, Shannon Hunt and Abby Cass. Reserve guard Kelly Hafer, who was like a coach on the floor too, a really, really sharp individual. So we had a really good ball club. Yeah. And a cohesive team that year.
Okay, so that takes you into the early 2000s. At some point you decided to retire from the head coaching position?
Yes, that I don't know if realistic, if realism came into play, but my brother Dan, who was a year older than I, Dan had cancer, and Dan was a head coach. In fact, we talked a lot. Dan was a head coach in Dixon, Illinois, and he had a glioblastoma multiforme stage 4 cancer. And I was coaching. I still remember this in January. I was coaching, and Dan had surgery over at Rockford, Illinois, St. Anthony's Hospital. I told my assistant coach, Cindy Bell, I was going to be with him that day. And we played Dyersville Beckman that night. Got home, got to Dyersville, probably changed clothes, and got over to Beckman. Cindy had gotten the team over there and got ready for ball game. And we played phenomenally that night. We didn't have a particularly close ball club, but we played really well and beat a good Dyersville Beckman team. Okay, well, this is going pretty well. We go on the road to Comanche that very week, and we are so flat, it stinks. I had visited, that was my second visit to Dan, Dan had said, life's too short. He said, 2 hours, one of those things, smell the roses.
Yeah.
It's just to take, so I thought about that for days, and that was in the back of my mind. So Cindy took the team bus home. I rode home with my wife, and I told her, this is it. This is last year.
Okay. So that was...
2000.
2000, yeah. Okay.
So I gave up coaching in 2000. I stayed with girls track then for the next 11 years, but I gave up coaching basketball.
Okay, so you retired in...
2000 from coaching, and retired from teaching in 2011.
2011, so that you had how many years total?
33 at Washington Dubuque, 36 total.
What do you recall about memories about some of your colleagues at the high school? People that...
Well, I was junior member for a lot of years at Epworth High School. The likes of Al Eid, Lois Tyson, Linda Olson, Julie Norby, and then there was Tom O'Brien, who was in, out, and then stayed out, and Jerry Schmidt. So there are a lot of tug-of-war English department meetings. Just an awful lot of tug-of-war English department meetings, and Lois ruled with an iron fist for the most part.
Yeah.
I had a great rapport with Lois, just so... I don't think I was ever under the thumb of Lois, but really, really, really solid individual.
Yeah.
And there were things like, you need to do this, we're going to do this, whether you like it or not. And, like anything else, there's a pendulum. Are we on the grammar side of things? Are we on the whole writing side of things? Are we reading more novels? Are we reading more short pieces of literature? So that pendulum went back and forth, and I still remember at Dyersville, I was on the 1981 team to draft new textbooks. I was on the 1988 team to draft new textbooks at Dyersville the second time. I was on the 1985 team to draft new textbooks. I was on the 2001 team to draft new textbooks. So, I don't know, it's being in the wrong place at the right time or right place at the right time, either way. But I noticed through the years we went from one side of the grammar spectrum to the other side of the grammar spectrum, and our textbooks reflected that.
Well, you know, if you're in it long enough, like we were, realized that it's all a cycle. I
mean, it is.
It just keeps on regurgitating.
Repackage it, put a new name on it.
Yeah, cosmetically it's a little different, but it's the same stuff.
So, and at the end, one of the things I guess I was proud of at the time and pushing, and I had talked about this as early as 1995, was to have an American Studies program. And when I left, or I was really pushing that, and I did teach American Studies for 3 years at Western Dubuque. My love of U.S. history and American history, American literature together dovetailed in perfectly. I don't think we always had everybody on the same page with it, but it was a great fit. I remember the 2 years I taught and had Paul Cleary and Justin Smith as the history teachers. Those two individuals bought in, and we had a great time together teaching American history.
You actually were in a period of time where technology began to really proliferate.
Yes.
What are your memories of how that happened?
Well, I remember the Apple IIe's at Dyersville. I was fortunate enough to have five or six in the classroom. And one of the things we did, we published a lot of writing. The kids would take it to. So not only was that, but the computer, along with taking the Iowa Writers' Workshop, and I had two great professors, one from Vermont, the University of Vermont, and one from the Western Kentucky University when I went through the Iowa Writers' Workshop project. And, you know, to get kids published was really important. So we bombarded doctor's offices, barber shops, you name it, with Western Dubuque writing.
Okay.
And there was a time period there. So the Apple, computer worked in very good with that.
Yeah.
And so we did a lot of online, a lot of writing, a lot of saving and drafting, a lot of drafting of that. By the time I was finished, we had, we were sending copies of students' assignments via technology to the teacher, so I could look at a draft online, make comments, and send it back for republication and saving paper.
Isn't that amazing how that all came to be? And it is.
And I think we were on. I got to say, I don't know if we always stayed there. Probably not. But we were on the lead end of getting computers at Western Dubuque.
Yeah.
I think we were ahead of a lot of school districts.
And I remember when we put in the backbone of the internet T1 line into the building. You know, that was a big deal, speed-wise.
Right.
And then at that point, we had to run the wires, and I can still remember Ted Krager drilling through those beams.
Yes.
And standing on a desk, and then he'd finish, move on, and all the sawdust, he'd never clean up.
Right.
So.
And then Lloyd Gibbs was involved in that a lot too, I think. But
yeah.
Yes, I remember having the, is this classroom going to be open this period? Yes, okay, here I go.
Oh gosh, yes.
It is amazing. And like I said, I'm sure today the playing field is level, but I truly think that Western Dubuque had one of the great English departments.
Yeah, without question.
Through the years.
Yeah. And you hear, you talk to alums repeatedly, they'll say how grateful they were for that experience, because when they got to college, man, they were ready to pull again.
Three of my former students that are now in the Western Dubuque system, I can point to Jacob Brindle, who's doing a super job with English at Cascade High School, Josh Lucas, and Brianna Lukes, who are three former students who are involved in that. And Josh particularly, and Jacob as well, talking about how many kids would come to them when they were in college. I don't know how to do this.
Yeah.
And they could fluently go right through it.
Exactly, because, yes, I think if those kids were prepared all the time. I just heard it again and again, you know, over the years. So anyway, you decided your last year was 11?
2011, yes.
Okay.
One of the things, I guess, you know, you prepare for the next step of your career. And one of the things that we looked at, we don't have children, so we had what we needed. And since that point, we love to travel. I'm a baseball history connoisseur, so we go down to Arizona and see lots of spring training games and play a lot of golf and embark on different historic journeys through the area.
Okay. Thanks for your time, Jim.